Hi everyone. This episode of Jay Guys and Jedi is dedicated to Carrie Fisher, who at the time of this recording passed away a few days ago. Carrie, we cannot put into words how you have affected our lives. As Leia, you showed us that a princess could be a general. You proved that princesses weren't dainty little dancing things that sing in the woods and find husbands. You gave Leia beauty, strength, sass, and intelligence. Leia was the first crush of millions of men and women, and she was an inspiration for so many little girls and boys. Leia was the gateway to many beloved Star Wars characters like Padme, Satine, Rey, Jen, and of course, Maya Ahsoka Tano. No one else could have impacted so many lives through a character like you did. Outside of Leia, you were unapologetic. You proved that strength and beauty should always be served with a sharp tongue. You're an advocate for animals. You fought the stigma of body shaming women in Hollywood. You normalized mental illness. You taught us never to take ourselves too seriously. You taught us to love everyone regardless of where they came from. And most of all, you showed us that you never have to be a one-hit icon as you expanded your career beyond the limits of Star Wars. Thank you for everything, Carrie Fisher. I would like to leave this with one of my favorite quotes from you, which is, "Stay afraid and do it anyway." Thank you, Carrie. We're going to miss you so much. Okay, I really need a moment, Chris.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to Jay Guys and Jedi.
Well, this should be the opening. Hi, everyone. Welcome to a brand new episode of Jay Guys and Jedi. Oh, man. You know what really got me though? The day that Carrie Fisher died, I was at work and I had spent like a good chunk of the morning crying and like just seeing things like Mark Hamill and reading tweets and seeing fans' reactions and stuff. But what really got me, because I work in a comic book store and I had set up this little display on the front counter of like little princess, little Leia Organa dolls. Just to have them there. And this little girl, she had to be maybe 8 or 9, and she came up to me with the Princess Leia trade paperback and the Star Wars annual that has Leia on the front, and she hands them to me and goes, "I would like to buy this so I can always remember Princess Leia."
Oh, jeez.
That's what got me. I was just like, okay, you're precious. But I talked to so many fans. Like, I talked to this other woman, and she was like, you know, I went through probably about 4 Leia dolls a year as a kid because I just loved her so much. Like,
what,
that was my princess.
What was she doing with them? She must have played rough, man.
Leia played rough. Like, that's one of the things with me. Like, I was never into the Disney princesses as a kid because I wasn't that, like, I'm going to sing in the woods and find a husband and magically be okay. Like, that's not who Leia is. She was a rough player. She was the one that ripped the blaster out of Luke's hand and started shooting stormtroopers. Get in the shoot, flyboy. I mean, Leia played rough, and Carrie Fisher played even rougher, and she is such an inspiration. Like, to not... She could cut through bullshit with, like,
I have friends in my life who are Carrie Fisher, you know what I mean? I have people that I know that have had some hard living times, and when they came out through it, it's what you can tell by her sense of humor. You could tell also by the, you know, 100,000 packs of cigarette voice too. You know, there's just the style and the dog and everything. Like when I would see interviews with her in recent years, I would be like, I know that person. You know.
Yeah. The thing that keeps getting me is her service dog Gary.
Yeah.
And I keep seeing pictures of him, but yeah, like the one that got me. Yeah, and so poor Gary and his mommy's gone.
I know.
And so it's just, I've talked enough. What does Carrie Fisher mean to you, Chris? I know I'm bringing this on you.
It's from Star Wars. Today, my roommate and I were driving around Rochester, and there's a really great local artist, and he sort of does pop art, you know, celebrities, but he does very, you know, almost a kind of Andy Warhol-ish sort of thing. They look like, you know, silkscreen stuff, and he puts them on those sort of like electrical transformer boxes that you see by the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll put up his art, and on top of the transformer box he'll put a pile of prints of it and then a pile of stickers of it for people just to take, and you know, a little sign that says, you know, please only take 3 stickers and 1 print, you know, so everybody can have some. And that's his art in Rochester. And, you know, last night, you know, Princess Leia popped up on one of them. This bit, you know, it's just a big, beautiful, you know, the classic Princess Leia with the buns, bright blue space behind her. It was beautiful and perfect. And right on this main road that a lot of people drive down, and my roommate and I stopped and I took a picture next to it, and that was when I was really like, oh, jeez.
You know, you need to send me a picture of that.
She's 60. It's on Facebook. You can just go onto my profile on Facebook and see it. I think you're friends on Facebook with my roommate, too, so it should probably be on there. Well, I'll make sure you see it. And
I'm looking at it. I'm looking for it right now. No, I don't want to look up wrong.
Yeah, if you just click on my profile, it should be one of the first things on it there. Isn't that a beautiful beautiful print though?
Yeah.
And yeah, that, I mean, it hits home a little harder with me because she's only 60 years old. She's only 11 years older than me, you know.
Yeah.
And then we found out today also that her mother just had a stroke while planning the funeral.
Oh.
So Debbie Reynolds is in the hospital now. So it's been really bad for the family.
That's sort of like Zsa Zsa Gabor. She passed away earlier in the week, and then 4 days later, her son passed away.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah. I'm so done with this year. I'm glad that by the time this episode comes out, it's going to be fucking 2017.
Well,
I was just talking to my stepmom tonight. I was like, when they do the In Memorial at the freaking Academy Awards, it's going to be like 10 minutes long.
It's going to be like that every year, Hope, unfortunately, because it's just a matter of demographics. The baby boomer generation, I mean, it was named the baby boomer generation because it's huge. You know, it's people came back from war and made a lot of babies, and the economy went up, and you know, the population surged, and they're all reaching their golden years now. So, and also that's the generation that that was completely in our modern pop culture, TV, you know, movies. So that was the generation where all of a sudden there were, you know, 10 times more celebrities because you had TV and movies. You know, you had a lot more platforms coming out, and then as time has gone on, we've got cable and stuff. So the number of recognizable faces that people have grown up with that are from that generation now is huge. And they're all getting, you know, they're all, Carrie Fisher's on the young end of that, you know?
Yeah.
And
so the plan is to take Mark Hamill and we're going to put him in a bubble and just wrap him in bubble wrap, and he's not allowed to do anything ever again.
Well, as we'll get into in this episode, you know, there's a chance we may never lose anybody in a movie ever again.
Yeah. I had this like realization that when episode 8 comes out in December, like she's already filmed most of her stuff
she finished her work on it. So whatever
I'm just
she
gonna
did,
be a wreck when I see her on screen.
It's going to ruin a lot. I think it ruins a lot of the fan theories that she's Snoke, or, you know, she's the evil force behind it.
Yeah, though I will say, like, they probably, if they have to do reshoots, will probably do what they did with Philip Seymour Hoffman in Hunger Games and just kind of work around any reshoots they have to do.
Right. They're going to be I'm sure they'll be very careful and reverent about how they do it because it's a little different than Peter Cushing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, to happier things where everybody dies on the planet. Spoiler. we're here to talk Rogue One this week. We wanted to do a kind of like a special episode. By the way, Happy New Year.
I think our schedule is going to get disrupted around this time every year because there'll be a new Star Wars movie. So.
Yeah, this is our first time having a Star Wars movie come out with us doing J-Guys and Jedi. So this is kind of a tester for us. Oh, man. So... Rogue One. I always put a summary at the beginning of all these about the episode. Okay, I'm going to make up a summary. So, there was a guy, and he was actually a nice guy, but he had a really shitty boss. And his boss was like, hey, make a super weapon. And he was like, I don't want to do that. So he kind of ran away with his wife, and he raised his baby. And somehow he knows a terrorist.
Oh, by the way, spoilers.
Yeah, and so we don't actually know how he knows a terrorist, but he does. And then when his boss shows up again, he's just all like, hey, you're not as cool as Michael from The Office. And he's like, I know, I'm evil, so I'm going to shoot your wife. Bye. And where's your daughter? Well, he takes the guy, and the daughter runs away, and she gets rescued by a terrorist who raises her. Well, like 20 years later, she's all like walking her way downtown, faces past. All that homebound Taylor Swift stuff, and a guy comes up. He's just like, hey, my name is Boring Joe, but my name's actually Cassian, and you gotta come help with the rebellion. And she's like, okay. And so she meets actual Queen Mon Mothma, and actual Queen Mon Mothma is like, hello, welcome to the rebellion. We know where your daddy is, and we need your help.
I call her Long Neckma.
Oh, I wish she did more. I meant to put that in my notes, but I wish Mon Mothma did more. And so then she's all like, okay, well, let's go find my daddy. But then Joe Dick 2 is just like, hey, boring guy, you're actually going to kill the dad. And he's like, okay, but we got to find a pilot first. So they start looking for Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is a pilot, because the guy looks exactly like Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote Hamilton and In the Heights and stuff like that. And so Lin-Manuel Miranda was like, oh, man, I got to find this terrorist to tell him about the daddy's plans. But no one believes him. So the terrorist tortures poor Lin, and he's all like, oh, no. Well, Jin and Cassian get to this, like, Jedi temple thing, and they meet a blind guy and this really cool, like, machine gun guy. And they're all like, we believe in the Force. And Jin's like, that's cool. You want to come with us? And they're like, sure, why not? We're way more interesting than your characters are. And so they go and they find the pilot, and poor Lin-Manuel Miranda is all just like, thank God you're here. She's like, I need to talk to my terrorist daddy. And so he goes in there and he's like, wow, you've gotten so big. She's like, hey, I know you're like my foster dad, but I need to see the message from my real dad. And the real dad's like, okay, so daughter, here's the message. I made a correction in a 40-year plot hole. And this plot hole is what actually, like, happened in 1977, but I made it. So you just have to go find the plans to figure out where I put this plot hole. And she was all like, awesome, we're actually going to fix a 40-year-long plot hole. Let's do this. But Tarkin was just like, ha-ha, I'm here. Look at my ship. I'm going to do a test run. And the first boss was just like, but this is my ship, Tarkin. He's like, shut up, young man. I'm not really here. I'm fake. So they shoot the planet with the Jedi Temple. And the good guys barely escape except for Saul Guerrera. Wah-wah. And so when they get back, the Alliance is just like, shit, they have a super weapon. Oh, God, shit. What the fuck are we going to do? Why is Anderson from Sherlock here? Hey, Sherlock, what's up? He's like, I believe in Sherlock Holmes. Because the actor that plays Anderson in Sherlock was in that scene. And so they're like, we're not going to do anything. And then you hear that Hera's on the intercom. And I freaked out. But then Jin is all like, rebellions are built on hope. We need to go have a covert mission. And a bunch of people are like, well, we have nothing else to live for, so let's do this. So then they fly to Hawaii. And when they get to Hawaii, they come up with this very elaborate plan where half of them are going to fight while Jin and Cassian and, like, the coolest bot ever. I actually like this robot, which is a new one for me, named K2. And they sneak in. So as they're sneaking around, everyone starts dying, and people start getting shot, but they're able to, like, teleport the Death Star plan messages to the Rebellion. And Tarkin shows up again, and he's just like, oh, man, they got it, so let's just shoot them. So he blows up the planet, and everybody dies. But then Vader shows up, and he's just like, oh, shit, they got the plans! So he goes and just starts killing people, and these, like, rebels barely get away with the plans, and they give it to Princess Leia, who... And Carrie Fisher's role just reminds us that we need to have hope. And then we go into episode 4. Well, that was the plot of Rogue One.
Guaranteed you're going to like this movie because it ends with... Not only does it end... The last word in the movie is your name.
Yeah.
But it ends in that Star Wars way where when a Star Wars movie goes... Bum, ba-dum, 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 dun, at the very end of it.
Mm-hmm.
The few seconds before that is kind of the summary of the spirit of the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you're like the under you get the underlined takeaway from Rogue One is your name.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not
I kind of forgot about that because I've only seen it once since then. So yeah,
I'm going again on Saturday.
I've only seen it once so far, so I will say, like, I have to have everybody's names pulled up, so I'm sorry if I mispronounce stuff, because I've only seen it once, and it was, like, 2 weeks ago.
I know there's other ways of watching it, and I've pretty much resisted watching all but just a few select scenes for for educational purposes.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, hey, I got a platitude.
Oh, you figured... Okay, because we were going to make up a platitude. So, make up a platitude,
I'm going to pull it out of Carrie Fisher.
Okay, well, first and foremost, Happy New Year, Yoda.
Mm-hmm.
New Year, new people to scorn. New people to scare.
Yoda has
new
to...
children to chase. New
Yoda
skirt
has to put
stuff
away
to
the
love.
Space mistletoe.
Mm.
Okay, here's our space...
That's okay, because the mistletoe was far too low for anybody to get to, except for unless they were laying on their bellies. He just hooked it on his belt by his lightsaber.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right.
Stay afraid, but do it anyway. In bed!
Oh, but actually, stay afraid and do it anyway is actually a really good platitude for Rogue One.
Yeah, it is. It certainly is. Actually, you're right. It's actually kind of perfect. There we go.
It is. Thank you, Carrie.
I was just trying to be funny.
Yeah. So, since Chris has already done, like, 3 Rogue One shows...
I've done 2, but I've probably done a sum total of about 5 hours on Rogue One. And, you know, my opinion on it is, I guess, if you've listened to them, it should be pretty well known now. But I'll go over my cliff notes of my general feelings of it to this. But I've been planning on just sort of working off your reactions, and I know that you and I are going to be able to tie this a lot into Clone Wars. And
I made a list of, like, Clone Wars and Rebels things.
Yeah, and and really, and this is a point I've made in other ones, but actually I'd like to make it deeper. You and I will be making it deeper just from looking at your notes for this, is, you know, a lot of the surface of this movie that people are talking about and that people get right at first from this movie is how it, you know, is really conscious of fitting into the star, you know, the original Star Wars, you know, episode 4 and
yeah.
The look and feel of the Star Wars universe, but it has a different approach where it's shot differently, you know, and all that. And that's sort of what's defining the movie for people, you know, a dark ending. But I think, like, the deeper DNA of this movie comes from the, you know, whether it's Legends or the EU books coming out now or the comics, Marvel and Dark Horse and the new Marvel ones. And just generally anything, Clone Wars and Rebels really strongly. I think this movie is built on that DNA. It's the first extended universe movie of Star Wars. So, mm-hmm. So, and you know, it has references to stuff in a lot of the story of this movie could be, you know, enhanced by reading the book that came before it. And, I mean, Clone Wars just set the standard of taking the presenting the wars in Star Wars. And that's what this movie is doing, a very Clone Wars thing, where it's like, here's a battle. And here's just all the stuff around the battle, the characters, and how it fits into the larger, you know, Star Wars universe, either the Clone Wars or the Battle of the Rebellion versus the Empire. And that's a new thing to people watching it as a movie, but it's not a new thing to people who are steeped in the EU and the animated stuff from TV. So it almost is there to work for both those audiences. You know, how it, depending on how steeped you are in Star Wars, depends on how you're going to see this movie.
My very first, like, because I have my notes separated between likes, dislikes, and then Clone Wars and Rebels things. My very first like is, I finally got my dark and gritty movie where it's Star Wars.
Yes, yes. And it's PG. I mean, we're doing the Clone Wars show. We should be so biased. PG-13, gritty Star Wars battle. It's right up our alley, you know?
This is very much like, the fighting in this was right along the same line as something like the Second Battle of Geonosis in Clone Wars. I mean, of course, you know, you're not going to see people explode into body parts. I mean, this isn't Saving Private Ryan with like brains.
When Saul Guerrera comes on to Rebels, they're going to Geonosis too.
Mm-hmm.
So
this is right in the same vein as that. Like, you know, in Second Battle of Geonosis, we had like a ship explode and a clone hanging out of the side of it, like it's on fire, and he's screaming for his life. Like, you know, this is very much in that
same
vein.
And no one rescues him.
I know.
He's a goner. It's just like, oh, that's a terrible way to go.
Yeah, and that's how it is with this. I actually really loved how unapologetic this movie was. Like, it was pretty much them going in and just going. Actually, I was reading an interview with the director, and he, like, in an early script, they had two scripts, they had two endings, like a happy ending and this ending. Because he wrote a happy ending because he wasn't even sure if Disney would get on board with a movie where everybody
died.
He
absolutely just figured, he just assumed they wouldn't. He was Disney never let me do it, and Disney actually sounds like it was Disney who was like, no, you know, that works for the movie, do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, that's a rare, you don't often hear stories of the studio saying that to a filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a few exceptions. Like, I don't care who you are, like, Up is one of the saddest openings of a Disney movie ever. Mm-hmm. Up is an incredibly sad opening. And then you have, like, a dark opening with Hunchback of Notre Dame. So they do it, but nothing like in this to where, like,
everybody die. I was going
to
say, Disney are the masters of sad openings for kids' movies. They're the master from Bambi on up, you know. Bambi was the one that paved the way. But that's at the beginning. That's at the beginning. You know, Disney's also patented for the happy ending. So
yeah, I mean, look at the ending of Fox and the Hound. Like that's sad, but at least they live.
Yeah.
So like I was so happy. Like, kind of for me, like the when I realized that everybody was not gonna make it, or at least some of them was gonna die. About 2/3 away through the final battle, I remembered a line from A New Hope when they said, a lot of good men died to get these plans. And it dawned on me, and I was just like, oh. And then Churik got shot. And then Boz got shot. And then Brody died. And I was like, oh, God, it's happening!
Yeah.
like I at least expected Jen and Cassian to get out because they were the main protagonists. But I was actually, and this is going to sound so bad, I was actually really happy they died.
Yeah,
because
that's
it's
what
such
everybody
a common
says.
Trope for... Yeah, it's such a common trope for, like, the two main people to get out. But then it also wouldn't make sense because then, you know, they would be in A New Hope. They would be there.
Right.
Unless they were just, like, so injured they were in, like, back to tanks through the rest of the, like, original trilogy or something.
Or they just became mediocre fighters after that point. No, the thing about what they nailed home in that movie that everybody, really, except for Jen... Jin's the only, like, real tragic death of in there. Well, you know, I don't know about Chirrut, what his history was. But, you know, most of those guys that were there, you know, they needed redemption. They've killed people in cold blood, you know? And this was a shot at redemption. And with Jin, it was just basically tragedy, you know, her death at the end, because she really didn't, she really basically just got the shit end of the stick from, you know, childhood on.
Yeah. For me, mine was kind of Bodhi, the pilot. I started, like, after the movie, I read more about him. And he was in, I think it was the previous, like, the lead-up book, but I haven't read the actual book yet.
I don't think he is. I don't think they, or wait, the guy with no name?
No, Bodhi the pilot. The guy who defected and went to Saul Guerrero with the plans.
Right, I thought his character didn't have a name. He was just, like, Imperial pilot.
No, his name was Bodhi okay. Rook. But I was reading about Bodhi. And he just seemed like he was always a good guy. Like, he kind of got recruited into the Imperials, to the Empire, and because he was a good pilot, but he wasn't good enough to be a TIE fighter. So they, like, shoved him into shipment containers. They were like, you are now a shipment pilot. And that's how he met Galen. And, but he was, like, they had this bit about his mom who always said, like, you know, you always talk, but you never listen. You need to listen more and talk less, which just is straight out of Hamilton, which is just influences my thing even more that he's Lin-Manuel Miranda in disguise. anyway, but like, so like, he just seems like he had a rough time always because he was never good enough for the Empire. And this was like the first time he was good at something. Yes. He was good in the rebellion, and that's who he was. And like, he was always just needed to be a rebel and to be in this place where he could thrive, and he can never thrive under the Empire. So like, it really broke my heart even more when I found all that out about him, because he was one of my favorite characters. I loved Bodhi. I thought he was just the sweetest little puppy, and I just wanted him to live and be happy and be adorable.
yeah.
So I really liked him a lot. I love seeing such a diverse cast in Star Wars. I think this is the most diverse that we've had in a live action movie to date. My only thing is I'm still having my gripe where I feel like we're not seeing enough aliens fighting.
Some good ones in here, but
yeah, but it's not like Rebels where we have like Zeb and Hera as main characters.
Yeah, but that's also a lot more expensive to do in a movie like this.
And that was my follow-up point. Like, it's something that would be so much more harder to do in a live action. So I understand why they do it.
Well,
but
look at Chewbacca in A New Hope. When they go into the cantina and you see all the... That's the first time you're seeing just, like, aliens spread out all over the place in Star Wars.
Yeah.
And some of the aliens are really cheesy. But when you see Chewbacca sells... Chewbacca looks real, you know, so they had to put extra care into that to sell him for the whole movie. And he stands out amongst all those other aliens as looking more realistic. And they would have, you know, they were already pushing the boundaries of that with Tarkin, and they had a robot in there. So, yeah, it would have been...
And I get that. It's just, like, I guess I'm, like, really spoiled with shows like Clone Wars and Rebels. Because we see, like, Twi'leks fighting on Ryloth. We know there's an entire planet of like, Twi'leks, like, rebelling against the Empire.
Well, that's why, and, like, you know, in Star Trek, when Star Trek was an animated series, they could have a guy, a woman on the bridge who had the, you know, face of a cat. And a guy at the helm who had a third arm and a alien head on him, you know, a long, stretched out alien head on him, because you could just draw him.
Yeah.
You didn't have to build a realistic version of either of them. And
I know.
So,
that's why I'm like, I feel like that's the next step, like, showing that it's more than just the humans that are rebelling against the Empire. Like, there was so many other people that were there too. I have no idea how they would do like a live action Zeb. I have no idea, like, because his joints are backwards at places than a normal person's, like
he would have to be like an Andy Serkis, like, motion captured character.
Yeah, so I do understand why they didn't do it, but I'm ready for that next step to have, like, I'm super happy that we had such a diverse cast. And now I'm ready for the next step of, like, where are the aliens rebelling against the Empire? Because it's not just the humans doing it, and we know this from Rebels.
Yeah, and you notice Saul Guerrero's band had a great diversity of aliens in it.
Yeah.
But once we got into the rebellion, like in the upper tiers of the rebellion and the ships and stuff, it was only the Mon Calamari. And then down on the ground, you had a few other races. But on the ground, at the in the final battle, it was mostly humans fighting.
Yeah.
In that, and I'm guessing that's, you know, 90% budgetary. But,
and
yeah.
And like I said, I get that, but I'm ready for the next step. I mean, God, how much money does Star Wars make a year from, like, the TV shows and the comics and the merchandise and the movies? Yeah. Like, I'm ready for that next step of showing more aliens rebelling. So my next note is, I think the Invader scene is excellent. Like, that rivals Rebels as one of the most badass Vader scenes. And the scene that I'm comparing to Rebels is his fight with Ahsoka.
Right.
Like, that entire fight is just rivals this one in Rogue One.
But
like,
both of his big appearances in Rebels, he came off as being this horrifying force of nature. And that's another thing with this movie is people are like, whoa, you see Darth Vader and he's scary again. It's like, yeah, we sort of saw that in Rebels.
Yeah.
almost a year ago.
Yeah, like the first time we see it in Rebels, they drop a walker on him and he lifts it with the Force with like a fiery inferno behind him.
Yep.
And then we see him tell the Grand Inquisitor to behead two officers. Like, he's not playing around. And then with his entire fight with Ahsoka, is just, he's agile, he's deadly, it's heartbreaking because she cuts off part of his mask and there's Anakin underneath it. Compared to this end scene, like, when I saw him just going through the Rebels and just massacring them, like, yeah, like, that is what Vader should always be, and I'm so happy, like, we're in a time to where, like, we can do that.
Okay, yeah, okay, so your next note, I got something to say on your next note after that goes along with this, too.
So, I went with a group of friends, and I was the only one who absolutely loved Vader's terrible pun about choking on aspirations, or aspiration, what was it?
It's a double pun. Choking and aspiration.
Yeah. I loved that, because if you've seen Clone Wars, Anakin is a fucking nerd.
Yes.
He's the biggest nerd, and, like, he laughs at his own jokes. Like, he'll make a joke and, like, look at Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan will just be staring at him and be like, it was funny, I'm a nerd. Like, Anakin's, my friend Angel was talking about it, and she was like, if Anakin didn't actually become Vader, he'd be one of those dads at, like, 3 a.m. would be sitting in his boxers and eating peanut butter while his twins sleep, because they finally went to bed. Like, that's what my friend Angel said. And that's who Anakin is. And so, like, for me, I love seeing that little bit of old Anakin peeking out, because, you know, like, when after Vader said that, like, inside Anakin was just going, oh, shit, I just burned him. I got him good.
He was going, that was hilarious. Pretty good, yeah.
I'm hilarious. I'm so great because I'm Vader.
No, I thought it was kind of goofy when I first saw it, but I've grown to love it. And because I love the way they did the trilogy. It's like a trilogy of Vader scenes. And the first one is when he's in the Bacta tank.
Oh, that was such a good scene.
That scene is worthy of any... That's like Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, Return of the Jedi quality of like, ooh, that's cool. And story, you know, story, character, coolness all come together into a perfect moment. And it's filmed well. The music is great. But... the way they did it is that's the first scene you see of Vader. You see his lackey come in, and which I love that he has a space wizard lackey. He's a total space wizard. And then the second scene is him just dealing with, you know, Krennic and making his joke. In those two scenes, the first scene, it's like, okay, here's Darth Vader. But it's Darth Vader with, you know, just, it's Anakin in that Bacta. It's him stripped of all his artificial, you know, just what he needs to, he's just his stumps and his torso and his head. and you know, and it looks all warm and steamy, and the first thing I think is there, it's Anakin. You know, I don't think of it being Darth Vader. It's like Anakin is coming out of this Bacta tank. That's Anakin in there, you know, when he's alone and just floating in the primordial soup. And then he has to get suited up and deal with this guy, and you know, he just sort of does it off the cuff. And you're like, ah, that was, you know, that was just sort of a funny Darth Vader scene. You know, you're thinking, if you're going to use Darth Vader in a scene, why would you have such a slight scene like that?
Mm-hmm.
But that's just there to where the last scene comes out to make that scene even more horrifying. And when I'm seeing Darth Vader there, then you're seeing Darth Vader and Anakin together at the same time. He's Darth Vader. He doesn't care
anymore.
In the middle,
sorry, I'm confused. In the middle scene with Krennic, or in the final scene?
In the final scene, you're seeing the you're seeing Anakin in the Krennic scene too, with his joke and stuff. But he's like doing his Darth Vader duty. But when you see him go nuts there, you see angry Anakin. You see him doing stuff that he used to do in Clone Wars, you know, when he was fighting droids. But this time it's against...
He killed the dude that was going to blow up the ship with Satine on it. Like, he killed him, just in cold blood, just to save everybody. Like, we know that Anakin's a killer from Clone Wars.
Right, right. But now he's totally unmoored from ethics or morality, you know, it's all, you know... He has no, you know, he's so used to killing people now that he has no compunction. He kind of can do it with frightening style, you know, mm-hmm. and he's not fighting droids anymore. He was going through a wall of human flesh. And it makes it, you know, a lot of people are like, well, now that we know Anakin, it takes a lot of the edge off Darth Vader. And now they put the edge back on Darth Vader and allowed him to be Anakin at the same time. And mm-hmm. that's a triumph. That makes him more scary and make him more scary for it. More tragic, scary, and evil for it. And dangerous, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's very well done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like, if there's, you know, this movie will make a lot of money, but if there's a takeaway for Disney from this movie, they've brought Darth Vader back. People are gonna get a little shudder now when Darth Vader walks on, instead of expecting him to break into like dance, like all the videos from the like park now, you know, where he's having dance offs with people and stuff.
Well,
or doing
like,
commercials, you know, where he's riding the Dumbo ride and stuff like that.
Well, I'm gonna slightly correct you on something. I think this is where we bring back the shudder in Vader in the movies, but we already have this in Rebels.
Yes. Oh yeah, Rebels already did it.
Twice.
And they also did the hooking him up with Anakin also. Ugh. You know, connecting him with Anakin. So yeah, this movie basically just did what all those episodes of Rebels did in three little, you know, in a sort of short little segment for it. But once again, I think most people are not watching Rebels. You know what I mean? Just like Clone Wars, there's a segment that are of kids and people like us.
Yeah.
Which is a decent amount of people, but it's not the same amount of people that go to see Star Wars movies in the theater.
Yeah, it's not like the everyday people. Like for example, like I went with a group of people, and I was the only. Actually, no, I take that back. Because my buddy Paige, she also watched Clone Wars and Rebels as well. And so we were the only two people that, like, for example, knew who Saul Guerrero was beforehand. So we were all talking about the movie afterwards, and one of the guys was just like, yeah, I didn't really like the Saul guy. He was kind of confusing, and he was just, like, angry for no reason. And I looked right at him and said, you don't know about the fact that he murdered his own sister, do you? And he looked at me, and he was like, what? And I was like, yeah, he's the reason his sister died, which pushed him to be a terrorist. And he goes, oh. So, like... It's what I'm sorry if I just spoiled that for you, Chris.
No, I've sort of done little Saul Guerrero homework. I'm looking forward to seeing that arc.
Yeah, but it's a good one. And with my least favorite Rex outfit, because Rex looks like a dumb kid. Rex looks so dumb in that arc, that entire arc. It's my least favorite outfit of his. But yeah, like. So, I agree. Like, the everyday people don't know stuff like that because they had no idea who Saul Guerrero was. They were just like, who is this guy? And I'm like, He is the guy that the Empire uses as propaganda to make people hate the Rebellion, because he's the one that murders civilians to get to the Empire. Like, he's used as propaganda as the bad guy. Mm-hmm. So I totally get that. Like, there's so... I think that people... I think including Saul's going to lead more people to Clone Wars, because a lot of people's going to want to know who he is. I think a lot of people are just going to eventually get there. The only thing is, I always tell this to everybody who hasn't watched Clone Wars, is the first season is kind of rough to go through compared to the other seasons. Season 2 is really when Clone Wars hits jam, but you had just, like...
Season 1's good enough that they don't know if you haven't seen the other seasons. So yeah, if you watch season 1, it's good, but it just gets better and better as it goes along.
It's one of those things that it's also very kiddie. Very kiddish and Adventure of the Week. And that's what turns a lot of people off, is the fact that it's very kiddish and Adventure of the Week. I've heard a lot of people say they couldn't get through season 1 because it was so, like, kid, like, childish. And I get that, like, because I think that, too. I love season 1, but I also get it's not one of my favorite seasons because of the fact that it is so Adventure of the Week. It doesn't have the deep storytelling yet. Like, I really think Clone Wars hits its stride in season 2. And so, and all that has to do with the second battle of Geonosis. That's when they really pull out the big guns and go for it. And so, I get it. So, I'm hoping that this movie leads a lot more people to Clone Wars and then to Rebels, so I can stop telling people to watch it.
Right.
I'm so tired of telling people to watch it. My next like for this movie was, I really liked seeing Jyn's mother for however short it was. Because we talked about it briefly in our Revenge of the Sith commentary, that there are so many father-child stories in Star Wars. Like, that is Star Wars bread and butter, is everybody has a dad and a kid and daddy issues. Like, that's their moneymaker. But the thing is, like, we don't have very many mother-daughter, mother-son stories.
Usually in Star Wars, it's bad father-son relationships, dead mom. That's how it was with Anakin, you know?
And that's how it was, and then we get a bit things like Breha, Bail Organa's wife, and she didn't even say anything. She just held Leia. Like, what was her relationship with Leia? So it was really nice, even though it was really, really super brief. I would have I'm ready for them to walk away from daddy issues and to show some strong mommies. I'm actually kind of surprised by it because it hasn't come in sooner for Clone Wars or Rebels, though. Because Dave Filoni worked on a show called Avatar The Last Airbender, and there are so many strong female characters. And then he went on to do Legend of Korra. And, like, I always think about this, like, one character in Korra, and she's a mom. She's a mom of 4 kids. And she's not a fighter, but she's still a leader. She's one of the airbenders. And, like, well, she herself's not an airbender, but, like, she's married to one. So even though she's not part of this culture, like, she still helps build this culture. When a city comes under attack, she's the one that keeps everyone calm. She's the one that leads them to safety. And even though she's not a fighter, she's a strong mother. And she saves many people's lives because she has that ability to control 4 children. So she can control a mob and be like, all right, everybody, pay attention. So you don't have to be like Jyn being a blaster warrior to be a strong mom and to have that kind of relationship. Like, and so, like, I'm ready to see more moms in Star Wars. Like, well, I need to see more moms.
If you read the book leading up to Rogue One, Jyn's mom plays a much bigger part in it.
Okay, and that makes me so much
more strong character.
Happy.
She's more of a Princess Leia type, you know, fighter character and very active character, you know. If you read the book, it fleshes out the mom. It fleshes out Galen Erso's and Krennic's relationship. That's what the basic linchpin of the whole book is, the relationship between Galen Erso and Krennic. And I guess it really enhances the movie because it fills in a lot of those characters. You know, you don't really see an awful lot of you see more of Krennic than Erso, but you don't really see much of Erso. He's just sort of an object in there that gets acted upon, you know, in it. So I guess there's a lot of the things that happen in the movie have a lot more meaning if you've read the book.
See, that makes me super happy to hear. Especially, I'm going to just go ahead and jump on to a note, a note further down in my list, is the fact that I really like Orson Krennic's character a lot. I felt like he could be a character that they could easily put into Star Wars Rebels. And he would fit in there with people like Agent Kallus, who's already doubting the Imperials, or Scorn leaders like Admiral Constantine. I can easily see Krennic being someone like Thrawn, but what I really, really, really wanted to know more about was about Krennic and Galen. So I'm really happy that you said that, because like I feel like there.
I heard it's a really good book. I heard it's really well written, so it might be worth your time.
Okay, because that might have to be my next book after I finish Dark Disciple.
Scott Rifen gave it a good review, and he reads a lot of them, so he's a trustworthy reviewer of Star Wars EU novels.
Because, like, I felt like there was some sort of friendship that used to be there, but it's not there anymore. So I feel like there, like, when Galen admitted that he was the one that betrayed the Death Star, like, Krennic looked like he was actually betrayed by this. And he couldn't believe that he was the traitor. And so, like, I really wanted more of that, so I'm happy that it was at least in the book. I wish I could have saw it more in the movie. But I thought Krennic was a very, very, very good villain for this movie, because he felt like someone who could easily be put into Rebels and just be fine. Well, like I don't feel like they would have to force him in there. Like I can see him standing with Thrawn talking about the rebellion.
Yeah, I think they just knew if they developed the characters too much. I've said this in earlier episodes. It would be a 3-hour movie, you know. If they that's a big complaint with a lot of people, is the characters are roughly drawn, and a lot of people are like, I didn't really like care for anybody too much, you know, like care for their well-being to an extent where I was really upset when they died, except for the robot. Everybody cry when the robot die. But
yeah, I was telling that to somebody too, like comparing it to Force Awakens. I think Rogue One has the better story, but I think Force Awakens has the better characters.
Force Awakens was an emotional Star Wars experience, whereas this one was a visceral Star Wars experience. This one was the battles plus the technical innovation that usually happens in a Star Wars movie. It delivered those aspects of it, whereas Force Awakens was pretty much grabbing all the Star Wars fans and bringing them back to the womb and giving them a big, nice hug, you know?
Yeah.
It was kind of what sort of probably had to happen to get everybody on board.
And that's kind of how I felt. Like, I feel like I know who Rey is more than I know who Jen is.
Way more, you know, charismatic. These characters aren't charismatic characters. They're haunted. They're kind of stereotypes from a war, you know, dead end mission movie. So in the last one we discussed, we were thinking maybe they didn't want to make them too sympathetic and have us love them too much because they were all gonna die. To make it a little less, you know, traumatic for kids. I've heard some people taking their little kids into this, and it's been pretty traumatic for the little kids at the end. So
yeah, this is very much a more adult Star Wars movie.
Yeah, I mean, when people die, it's not like Han Solo died. You're not going to hear a gasp from the theater like when Han Solo died, except maybe the robot.
Yeah.
When the robot died, there were a lot of people like, oh. So, but that's like the dog getting shot, you know? So,
yeah.
To me, I'm developing a Star Wars movie philosophy. I guess I've developed it, and I'm only developing how to articulate it. But, you know, the expectation of Star Wars being fine art is unrealistic, and people should not expect that. It's pop art.
Mm.
It's pop art on the highest level, or it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be, you know, pop art with a lot of time and effort put into it, but at the same point, it's not meant to be too deep, you know, and nothing's ever going to recreate the magic of the first three, because they are what brought the universe into being. You know, it wasn't there before those first three movies, and watching it develop from nothing into people's consciousness is a different experience than it already existing, you know. That's never going to be replicated, but you know, I think the goal is to make good high budget movies with a lot of effort to make them a good movie, and to give them enough depth to give the world that depth, But it does. It's they're basically high end action movies, but they're like the highest end action movies, and they're not meant to win Oscars for anything really, but special effects, you know. But they should be better acted. So, you know, people who are expecting Star Wars movies to be, you know, super well written, you know, every character is going to be wonderful.
We just did a 3-episode prequel commentary about how that's not the case.
Yeah, and it's not necessary. And as long as Star Wars pushes the medium forward and maintains that level of effort where they really try, you know, where they put a lot of effort into making it a good movie, which they have always had with Star Wars, the main movies. There's always been a lot of detail, you know, effort, and same with Clone Wars, a lot of effort to make it fit, to make it right, to make it look good, to make, you know, to get good, solid actors, but like actors that you don't recognize and all that. And it's been wildly successful. And, you know, and I think people who are like, you know, the someday we might get a Star Wars Citizen Kane movie. But, you know, that's not the goal of Star Wars movies. The goal, this hits pretty much all the marks. If people are like, the characters weren't wonderful enough. Okay, maybe this isn't the movie where all the characters are wonderful. The characters were all wonderful in Force Awakens, you know?
Yeah. And, because I definitely, like, loved Finn. Like,
but I could have used more, like, there was action in Force Awakens, but I could have used more of that really beautifully done action. It was well done. It was workmanlikely done in Force Awakens. But this movie brings you into the, you know, this is the, like, the battle at the end of this movie. You feel like you're in it, you know? It's back to that Star Wars thing of like, whoa, you know, I know what's going on here, and how it's all it's pretty, but it also, you know, there's a flow to it. So,
yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about my character dislikes when I get to my dislike list. But instead, I'm gonna talk about two of my favorite characters. So I already mentioned that I love Bodhi the pilot. Like, he was just wonderful. I loved him so much. But my other favorite character was Churrit. I think he brought something, because my thing with Churrit was, my theory before this movie came out was somehow this was going to be linked to the Church of the Force in Force Awakens, because the old guy at the beginning of Force Awakens was a part of the Church of the Force. Well, being a Guardian of the Wills, that felt like it was kind of similar, and so I think that Churrit brought this brand new kind of. He actually kind of reminded me of the Lasats in Rebels, like Zeb's people, and how they used the Force almost like a religion, and it was a guiding thing to get them back to their homeland, opposed to, you know, like Jedi. And I just like seeing how the Force is just being expanded on. You know, like, there really aren't any Jedi anymore, but there's non-Force-sensitive people who still respect and study and worship the Force, and, well, maybe not worship, but, like, study and practice the Force and practice the ways of the Jedi, like, so people like Churrit, to show that it's not this dead thing. And I always think of, like, the line that Tarkin said in the earlier original trilogy when he was just like, "Oh, Vader, you're last of a spiritual kind, blah, 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 blah." And it's nice to see that it's not forgotten, that there's still people who are not Force-sensitive who follow and respect that. I mean, because we didn't have any Jedi in this movie. That's crazy. We only had Vader, but Vader is like a Sith Lord now. Like, we had no lightsaber
until the end of the movie.
That's insane. I mean, I guess you could, like, argue that there's a possibility that, like, Kanan and Ezra were there in the ghost ship. But, I mean, like, we didn't see it on screen. Right. That's crazy that we had an entire Star Wars movie without a lightsaber until the final scene. That's crazy. I'm
pretty sure Kanan and Ezra weren't there, or they would be, you know, they were looking for a Jedi. They were going after Obi-Wan Kenobi in Rogue One. This is why it doesn't seem good for Kanan and Ezra at least to be any part of the rebellion at that point. Because they needed a Jedi, and they would have been like, hey, you know what? We got a couple of Jedi here. Maybe we should send them to Obi-Wan Kenobi, because they do know who Obi-Wan Kenobi is.
Yeah.
Know? So,
oh, you just hurt my feelings a lot.
Sorry, that's what I'm sort of thinking about that, you know.
You know, I thought about that too, because like there's a few Rebels clues, and Dave Filoni kind of talked about it a little bit too. The fact that Hera's a general now in Rogue One, because currently in Rebels she's just a captain.
Right.
But they called for General Syndulla, so she's moved up through the ranks. So it's nice to know that like Hera's there. We saw Chopper in the movie as well. But the thing is like, Kanan and Ezra, we don't know if they make it to there. But Dave Filoni has said that if they eventually get there in Rebels, they would like to do the Battle of Scarif from the Ghost Crew's point of view. So that gives me some hope. I'm thinking that there's a chance that they're just not there. That, like, for some reason, they weren't on this one mission, and it's just going to be Hera, Sabine, and Zeb. Because we also have to argue the fact that, you know, and we've talked about this before, about how Yoda possibly either A, lied to Luke and said that he was the last Jedi, or B, he doesn't consider Ezra and Kanan full Jedi. Like, he doesn't consider them, like, because they weren't properly trained fully throughout the entire Jedi.
Yeah, but neither were Luke and
Leia. Yeah, but I mean, like,
alluding to them, you know, as being...
But we also know that Yoda's a dick. So, he could have been just trying to get Luke to that next point, and, like, maybe, like, in that time, he's realized his mistakes. Like, we don't know what happens between, like, the 3 years between Rebels and Rogue One that makes Yoda change his mind. All we know is that he was just like, oh, hey, because he called for Ahsoka, too, and Ahsoka's not a Jedi either. Like, I think we're seeing a brand new wave of, like, these people, and neither are the Inquisitors. The Inquisitors aren't Sith, and they're not Jedi, but they are Force-sensitive people who, like, use lightsabers and stuff. So I think we're seeing this, like, new breed of people who are not Jedi and Sith, but they're Force-sensitive, they can use the Force, so they're like Jedi, but they're not Jedi. Does that make sense?
Sure. Well, Disney is definitely, and like I said in the Mindless Drivel episode I was on, if you're going to keep making movies every year, you're going to have to expand the Force and expand the ideas of it to keep it interesting.
And they're already doing that. They started it in Clone Wars. We saw the Night Sisters.
Sure.
We saw the Mortis arc.
We saw
the Force Priestesses. Like, they've already started doing that. They've been doing it since 2008.
And Chirrut is like, he's basically... We were talking about this the night the movie came out at like 3 a.m. after we'd both seen it on Facebook, and he's like, he's that practitioner that, you know, he probably is a little bit force sensitive, he probably does feel it moving, but he's mostly a creature of faith, you know, he just has absolute faith in the Force and uses it to uses that and his heightened spidey senses to just move within it, you know, his faith in it allows him to move within the Force. So he's not a Jedi, he can't really manipulate the Force and, like, you know, pull things, you know, move things and do stuff like that, but he can put himself in the flow of the Force.
I do have to say something about Chirrut, and I think this is really cool. It was actually his actor Donnie Yen who made the choice to make him blind. He wasn't originally blind and he wanted that choice.
It's a good choice. It makes
it's
his
a
character
very good
a
choice.
Lot more interesting.
I think, like, really gives a great shout-out, and I'm sure he didn't do this consciously, but kind of to Kanan as well, how Kanan's kind of going through that currently in Rebels as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's nice to know that that's, like, somehow...
It's a Star Wars theme. You don't need your eyes. Your eyes are just part of your senses. You don't need them. That's right from Star Wars when they put the blast shield over Luke's head, so...
Mm-hmm.
So it's yeah, it fits in the theme of it.
Mm-hmm. So I think, to me, Chirrut was the most revolutionary character of this movie. I think he presented so many new options of the Force, how to use the Force. I think he's gonna, being a Guardian to the Will, like, is like the preface to, like, the Church of the Force and Force Awakens. I think this is, like, the beginning of that. And so, like, to me, he was one of the biggest game-changing characters of the movie in my eyes. No pun intended, because he has lack of eyes.
Oh.
Sorry.
Oh.
Anyway, moving on. Little shallow note. Between K2 and BB-8, I have new favorite droids. Sorry, R2 and C-3PO. I just think BB-8 and K2 are just such wonderful additions to Star Wars.
Yes, I agree.
BBA is just so cute, and, like, K2 is just, like... He actually kind of reminded me of 000 from the Darth Vader comics, like, the murder bot, only without the murder.
Without the murder. aspect of it too. Yeah, he had a voice that was similar to what I would think the Murderbot had too.
Yeah, like he reminded me so, because like 000 is just like evil C-3PO. Like he's had perfectly, he's trained in pleasantries and torture. Like and so like K2 is just plain in like pleasantries and sass. So I really liked K2 a lot, and I usually don't like droids, so that was a big thing for me. I loved seeing all the new locations. I liked seeing Scarif and having I don't think we've had like a Hawaii worlds yet in Star Wars.
Right, a South Pacific theater.
Yeah, like I was thinking about that like throughout Clone Wars and Rebels, and I don't think we've ever had something like that. I mean, Lothal's kind of like the Lerman land because it's kind of like this big vast Sahara kind of place. But yeah, like nothing like that. I liked seeing Jada. Is that the where the temple was? Jada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked seeing Jada and having that. This it was like once this place where it actually reminded me of the Ahsoka novels because at the end of the Ahsoka novel is like when Ahsoka finally makes the decision. She's like, I'm gonna be out in the open. I'm not gonna be Ashla anymore. I'm gonna be Ahsoka Tano. But holy crap, I need a lightsaber. And she was, she started focusing on all the place where they got Kyber crystals from, and they were all infected with Imperials, and that's why, spoiler for the Ahsoka novel, she actually kills an Inquisitor and takes his Kyber crystals.
Oh.
Well, yeah, what she does is she takes his Kyber crystals, and then she purifies it through the Force so it's not tainted with the dark side anymore, and that's why her lightsabers are white.
Okay.
So, yeah. So that's why she has to get it there. And that's kind of how I feel about Jada. Like, it's this place that's just completely infected with Imperials, and they're just taking all the Kyber crystals. And it really reminded me of the Ahsoka novels in that aspect. On one hand, you couldn't have a Death Star movie without Tarkin. and I've heard a lot of people, like, griping about how fake his CGI looked.
I liked it. I'm fine with it. I didn't think it looked terrible at all. I think I personally have this scandalous opinion that if you didn't know, you wouldn't have noticed that was a CGI character. If you were just watching the movie and didn't know who Grand Moff Tarkin was and that Peter Cushing was dead, it would have just like gone right by without even noticing it.
And see, that's my thing. Like, I didn't know Tarkin was going to be in the movie, and then when I saw him, I was just like, whoa, of course he would be here. Of course he would. Yeah. I get that, but for me, I have a very deep hatred for Tarkin. Like, I can't stand that character. I'm so excited that he blows up in the Death Star and dies in a fire. Like, I'm so excited about that. So I'm okay with him looking like a terrible, grotesque monster man.
He is a terrible, grotesque monster man. So it,
I know. So I was perfectly fine with like him being a grotesque monster man, and the CGI didn't bother me. Like the moment I saw it, I was like, "Whoa, that's CGI!" I knew it was CGI, but I was like, "I'm fine with it. It's Tarkin. He's the boogeyman and Slender Man and gross Hitler man in disguise." So I'm fine. Okay, so I'm gonna address something that I'm sure that a lot of people have been wanting me to talk about, which is Saw Gerrera in Clone Wars. This was my last like of the movie. To me, okay, I need to actually sip of my coffee. All right, to me, Saw Gerrera was everything I wanted him to be. Like, he was perfect. And like I said, the people I went with didn't like him, but they didn't have his Clone Wars background.
Right, right.
And he's exactly what I thought he would be from Clone Wars 20 years later, which is just like a shell of a man that's nothing but violent and brutal and... Yeah, because that's exactly what he was. Like, in Clone Wars, he was already extreme and ruthless.
He's Darth Vader.
I saw an article about that on Screen Rant. They compared him to Darth Vader. He's the Rebellion's Darth Vader.
He has breathing problems. He's half mechanical. He's gone to the extremes. He'll kill anybody to get what he wants, you know. He's just fighting on the other side.
Yeah. And so, like, I thought he was fantastic. Like, that was everything I wanted him to be. And they did just... I think from taking him from, like, a kid in Clone Wars, like a teenager, and putting him 20 years later to where, like... Saw was probably about 18, 20 in Clone Wars. Add that, and he was probably, like, late 30s to 40 in this movie. He looks so much older. And that's not saying it's Forrest Whitaker, but that's how he should look.
Yeah.
Like, he's aged past the point of being human. anymore. Like, he's just a shell of anything he once was. And so, like, he was, to me, was perfect. They just took what he was and made him into something even older and more deadlier.
Yeah, he's someone in his 40s who looks like he's in his late 50s.
Yeah.
Because he's lived a hard life, and that makes sense.
So, like, I just, to me, like, Saw was perfect. Like, that's exactly who he should have been. I would have liked to see him do a little bit more fighting and, like, see him. This is going to sound so terrible. I'm so sorry. I would have liked to see him, like, shoot a civilian and just be like, they were in the way. Like, because that's who he was. Like, that's who he was in Clone Wars. So I would have liked to see something like that. I don't think he actually fought in Jada.
Well, him torturing the Imperial pilot was pretty much that moment of, like, let's give him to the slug.
Yeah.
It'll suck his brain, but we'll get the information we need.
Yeah, but I would have at least liked to see him, like at least accidentally shoot a child and be fine with it, you know? Which sounds so terrible to say.
Yeah, a lot of that character development, I think, we're going to see some character development and character beats with him probably in Rebels that they won't do, and that they, you know, he was just here to sort of be there. And I think, you know, he just let himself, I think he was just like, I'm going to accept death now, because he'd reached that point to where Jin, who was somebody that he loved and had taken care of, and by the end he was like, if you come to kill me, you know, and he probably thought, I'm useless now. Yeah. I can't even trust this person that I should trust intimately, you know, and yeah.
You know what I'm actually, like, really looking forward to? The Rebels episode that I really hope they do. I watched a preview clip of it, and it had Rex and Saw meeting. And for anybody who doesn't know, part of the Clone Wars arc that Saw Gerrera was in, because it was an internal affair, the Jedi couldn't, like, fly in on their ships and save the day. But they could go and they could train the Rebels that was on Onderon, and Saw was part of that. So Rex actually helped train Saw. Like, him and Ahsoka actually taught Saw how to fight.
Right.
And so in the Clone War, in the Rebels clips they released for that episode, it had Rex and Saw meeting again. And Rex was just like, oh, my old friend, it's so good to see you. And he was like, oh, man, Captain Rex, you're really great. Like, and so, like, I hope, I really, really, really hope they have a moment where Rex goes, I didn't train you to do this. This is not who I wanted you to be.
I'm sure you're going to see that.
Yeah, and if they don't do that, I'm going to be sorely disappointed. Because this is somebody who Rex personally trained. And to see him just be extreme, I really hope we see that side of Rex of, like, that's not the honorable thing to do. You don't do that. And so, ugh, I want that. I can't wait for January when Rebels comes back. Even though by the time this episode comes out, it's January. But still, it's not January right now. So I'm so excited. All right, so I have a couple of dislikes about this movie. My dislikes were, I really wanted more between Galen and Jin with Saul Guerrera. Like, why did Galen trust Saul, who, for both the Empire and the Rebellion, both consider him a terrorist? Like, why did Galen trust this terrorist of all people to protect and save his daughter?
I just guess they were good friends and had some intense bonding moment where he trusted him, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I wanted at least, you know, we had a couple flashback moments. I would have liked to see that. Even if it was in, like, that moment where Jin was sleeping and, like, we saw, like, little snippets of, like, her past, I would have loved to see, like, a snippet of, like, Galen, Jin, and Saul, like, sitting at a table together. That would have been fine. That would have been enough. I just wanted to get, because I didn't know. Like, I was like, when Galen was like, go find Saul Guerrera, I'm like, that's not a good person to go save your, like, 6-year-old daughter. I hope you understand this, Galen.
No, he's a good person to have on your side.
Actually, yeah, but he's not the most, like, fathery man to be like, yes, I want this man to raise my daughter. Let's do this. Like, apparently you don't know Saul Guerrera enough. He's going to teach Jin how to, like, shoot babies or something.
Well, it kind of saved the universe.
Yeah,
it kind of ended up saving the universe, so.
Yeah. And I also just wanted to see more of Saul raising Jin and that kind of impact. Because Saul is an extremist, I don't get that from Jen. I don't get that extreme
aside.
We're
going to see that in books and comics and stuff like that, I'm sure.
I know, but it doesn't help me now.
Right.
That didn't help me for the movie. Like, I'm just sitting here going, like, okay, so Jen trusts this guy, and apparently they had a fallout, and she left, and that hurt his feelings. But why? Like, I would have rather at least had, even if it was just a throwaway lie, like when Jen was like, you wanted me to do this one thing and I didn't want to do it.
Right.
And saw it being like, that was like your first failure. Like, 10-second line of that. That would have been great. Like, that's all I wanted. I just don't know why Galen and Jen of all, like, trusted Saw Gerrera of all people so much. I don't know. To kind of, like, loop back to something we were talking about earlier with the characters, my least favorite characters of the movie are actually Jen and Cassian. I think that their character types are so cliche, especially for Jen. She was such a cliche character of, like, I'm going to be a gun-wielding badass and blah, blah, blah. And trust me, I'm happy that we had a female lead. But at the same time, like, I rather would have had her be more reluctant.
She was a bland version of Rey.
Oh my god, like, at least Rey is an adorable Cinnabon. Like, you could, like, bake Rey's at Cinnabon and eat them and feel warm and fuzzy. Like, because, like, Rey's an adorable little tiny dork. Like, Rey's a nerd, and she's kind of dorky, and that's what I like about Rey, is that she's adorable. Like when they get on Han Solo's ship and that big, like, tentacle monster is,
yeah,
like,
they didn't.
She, like, covers her face and, like, Finn pulls her away. Like, that's such a cute moment for Rey.
That's because they were working. I mean, the whole cast of Force Awakens was working their charisma, and there was they didn't work the charisma of these characters. They're, you know, Cassian could have been a little Han Solo lady killer type of guy. You know, a little more scoundrelly or whatever. But
Jin was, and she spoke at the same monotone at all times. We rebel. Rebellions are built on hope. She never fluctuated her voice at any point in time during the movie. Oh my god, my father. I'm his stardust. Like, she didn't even, like, fluctuate. And I like Felicity Jones. I like her as an actress, but this was not her strongest portrayal. And I think a lot of it's in the writing. Because I would have much rather had Jin be kind of reluctant. But then, like, when she finds out her father...
I think it originally was like that before the rewrites, because if you remember, there were scenes of her addressing the rebellion in handcuffs.
Yeah.
So
I don't even think
they restructured that part of her character.
Did they even have the line of her going, I rebel?
No, that wasn't. No, that wasn't in the movie.
It wasn't?
That probably had to do with the whole thing of where that, you know, she was like a criminal who was not, you know, really wanting to join the rebellion too much, you know.
Pretty much the entire teaser trailer wasn't in the movie,
right?
Because I was looking for the one shot. There was one shot that was my favorite shot in the teaser trailer, and it was when the doors open and they were running out towards the walker and, like, a beam flies by one of their heads. That scene still gives me goosebumps when I watch the teaser trailer, and I was so looking forward to that shot. And so pretty much every shot in the teaser trailer was not in the movie. Like, they did some massive reshoots. But just to finish up with Jen, I would have liked for her to, like, when her father, like, being reluctant, when she found out her father was involved, that's when she stood up and fought. Like, that's what I'd rather had. And Cassian's just kind of boring, but at the same time, something I do like about his character is I like that they showed the violent side of the rebellion. Because not all the good guys are heroic and brave, and I like that the good guys aren't always good, and the bad guys, like in the case of Agent Kallus and Rebels, the bad guys aren't always bad. And we see that with Bodhi, too. Bodhi was an Imperial, and he's not a bad guy. He was just in a bad place. And so that's something I think that the movie did really well, was to show that there are no good guys and bad guys. It's all gray when it comes to war, because you have good guys and bad guys on both sides. And that's something I think that Rogue One did really well. I just think that the character, Jen and Cassian, were kind of boring. But at the same time, I was thinking, like, I'm not sure how else you could have, like, really rewritten them. Because those were the kind of characters that were needed for this movie.
Yeah. Like I said, otherwise you would have had a 3-hour movie if you were flushing everybody out.
I would almost, like, want this to be, like, and this, because this is such an overdone thing, and I hate that I'm saying this, I would almost like Rogue One to be 2 movies. Maybe. Or at least, like, an extended, like, Master Cut movie. So, either that or, like, an extended Master Cut movie that's, like, 4 hours long.
Yeah, we're never going to get that. What we're going to get is the movies and then all the stuff that comes out around it to add to it, you know, to give you all that stuff.
Yeah. So.
And it allows the movie to move forward faster. So I think that's how they're going to do it, you know.
Yeah.
If you're really interested in the character, if you're really that intrigued of the character, they'll put out a comic eventually.
But there's the problem, though. I don't think that Jin and Cassian are intriguing enough that I would want to go read the comic. Does
right.
that make sense?
Me neither. Yeah, right, and right.
It's not like Poe. Like, Poe, I'm a few issues behind, but, like, Poe was so interesting, and he was so charismatic. And right. he's barely in Force Awakens. I'd like to go to Trio.
If you made those characters like that in this movie, you'd be crushed by the end of this movie. It would be demoralizing.
I would be okay with being crushed. I think that would make their deaths way more
well, imagine if Force Awakens, at the end of Force Awakens, all those people were dead. It would be just like, yeah, that was crushing. This is kind of crushing. It's just like, whoa, that was dark. But it's not an emotional, like, bummer, you know?
Yeah.
And but, I mean, I think that's what they were wanting to avoid, and I think it was wise to avoid. And I don't think you want to come out of a Star Wars movie with it being an emotional bummer unless it's, like, Empire Strikes Back and it's in the middle and it's, like, setting you up for the end, you know?
I don't think that would be a bad thing. I have to disagree with you. If they actually had, like, these characters as interesting as the ones in Force Awakens, and they still died, I think that would make their actions so much more heroic.
It would probably be a better
and that
movie
made, like,
as far
Leia's
as
line,
structure
like,
goes, and critics would have gone like, oh my god, and people would have loved it. But I think they actually wanted to avoid that. Once again, Star Wars is only, you know, this was more realistic and it had more shades of gray. You can only go so far in a two-hour movie if you want to start going into shades of gray without it getting too much like real life and starting to get bogged down. So yeah. I think they were really trying to ride that line and they were like, yeah, people are going to love the robot enough, you know. We don't want to, and people are going to be bringing their kids.
See, that was me for, like, Bodhi and Chirrut. Like, when they died, I was crushed. Like, that was me. But, like, when Jin and Cassian died, I was just like, oh, okay. Well,
I was
kind of misty. Like, I got a little misty, like, oh, they're all dead. But I was, like, more, like when they threw the grenade in the ship that Bodhi was in, and it rolled up to him, and I was just like, no! And then the ship exploded, and I was just like, no!
Yeah.
No!
Yeah, that was the scene where everybody was just getting struck down. They got their, you know, romantic go out in the sunset death.
No, okay, I'm gonna fight you on this one, because here we go. Not insofar as
there was a romance between the two of them, but romantic as in two people, like, when you get to die, you get to sit down in the sand and just go, all right, I'm ready to face up to death, you know.
Because John M. Wilson, one of our listeners, mm-hmm. actually wrote me, like, sent me a message, and he was just like, I hated the romance at the end of Force Awakens, and I was like, or at the end of Rogue One, and I was like, what romance happened? Like, what did I miss?
There was a little bit of human companion, like, human comforting.
And that's
how I pictured it. It's like,
and that's how I told John. I was like, that was just them, like, they were the last two people that's left, and death is coming, and they had a human embrace. There was no romance. It's not like they made out. And so I was like, no, John, it wasn't that. And he was like, I feel a lot better about this now.
It was two people.
It was more romantic. You might have been able to
develop a romance between them further down the line if they lived. And there seemed to be some sort of interest in them. But that was because they're both attractive rebellion people or whatever. So they were sort of...
I didn't take it like that in any way, shape, and form.
Yeah, I don't really think she was getting over the fact that he was going to kill her dad enough to have a romantic relationship with him
romance?
They would have had to live a lot longer, and there would have had to been more chipping away for them to have a real, like, sparks of a romance in between it. And that's the thing is, these people are not, that was not in the cards for this movie. This movie was, you gotta get it done in this narrow amount of time. There's, you know, There's no time for little fun things in this movie. It was a, you know, a mission movie.
If anything, I ship Churrit and Boz. There we go. They were just sweet, precious babies.
Yeah, they're a total Ernie and Bert.
Like, they were just sweet, precious babies. And Bodhi can come along with them. There we go. I just think that you mean romance, like, in, like, almost like Victorian romance writing, as in
it was a romantic idea of standing and getting enveloped in the light, you know, but it actually reminded me of
Deep Impact.
there was no romance between the characters, like, well, we're gonna die, hold my hand, I'll hold your hand.
Yeah.
This is pretty intense.
Because, like, at the end of Deep Impact, the girl, this isn't a spoiler, this movie came out when I was a child, if you've never seen Deep Impact, at the end when the thing hits and, like, the tidal wave is coming, this woman has spent half the movie trying to reconnect with her father, and she goes to their beach house, and they're holding each other, and she goes, I love you, Daddy. He's like, I love you, too. And then they get hit by a tidal wave, and they die. So, like, that's how I kind of took this as, like, you know, like, these two, like, in their last moments, they're the only people left that they know, and it's a human thing of, like, comfort me before we die.
Yeah.
So there was no love making, baby making, making out romance in one.
Here we are, we did it, and now, you know, we can go out. We can go out in redemption, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, now that I know that there's a book, this next note is just very superficial, so I'm just going to say it and move on. Galen Erso is a character that they told us was super important, but we don't really know much about him. I would have loved more development about him, but we've already talked about that, so
now
never mind.
You know how you can get it.
Yep.
Or you can just go to Wikipedia and read what it says about the book.
Now, I only have two dislikes about Saul Guerrera, and this is my final dislike of the movie. The first one is I wish they somehow mentioned something about his sister Stila. She was such a big factor to the kind of rebel extremist that he became, and I really wanted them to give her a shout out. I think the closest that they got was like when Jin showed up, he was like, I'm so happy that you're with me on this day. But we don't know what this day is. And so I took that as this death of Stila. Like, that was the anniversary of her death or her birthday or something. That's how I took it as a Clone Wars fan. But they never actually expanded on what this day was to Saul. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I figured he wouldn't mention his sister because people would go, like, what? So
well,
that,
no.
that's
no,
going to
that
end up in the
smart.
Rebels. Huh?
I think that would have been so much smarter. Because if he would have been like... actually, what I really wanted is right before he died and he was watching the thing come towards him, I would have been, like, would have liked him to just be like, I'm coming, like, I'm coming, Stila!
Or no. It could be like, what is it, Cat on a Hot, is it Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, or it's Stila!
Yeah.
Stila!
Like Stella, yeah. But the thing is like, I think that would have been very smart of them, like, marketing-wise, because then people would have been like, people who weren't familiar with Clone Wars would have been like, who's Stila? And it would have made them look into that. And then they'd be like, oh, she was in Clone Wars. Like, it could have gotten people to watch Clone Wars. Or at least that arc, you know?
I'm too cynical. I think people would just be like, what the hell is he talking about?
But then there are people like me who's not cynical who have been like, oh man, I want to know who this character is. Like you know, like Bodhi. Like, I was like,
you already
I...
do. That's because you're not cynical. You've already seen his arc in Clone Wars.
Are you okay over there?
just a little lung cancer. It's okay.
Okay. Well.
So have a sip of this Arizona green tea.
But like, see, like I argue back then. There's characters like Bodhi and Churrit, which I've already read their Wikipedia articles like three times.
Right.
Because I wanted to know more about them. And so, like, I think it would have been a very smart move just to, like, somehow mention Stila.
Yeah.
Because it would have drawn some people to Clone Wars and just start looking into, like, okay, who is this character? I felt like that was a big missed opportunity. And the other thing I am on the fence about, this is more of on the fence of thing, like, I understand why Saul chose to die, because he's been pretty much fighting for 20-plus years, and he was ready, and he wasn't even really a man anymore. He was pretty much, like, a head in a suit. But at the same time, like, The reason I'm on the fence about it, because I felt like it was kind of a cop-out, because to me, like, that's not who Saw Gerrera is. Like, that's just not who he is, in my brain. And I would have rather had him die trying to escape Jedha on a separate ship and not make it out. Because Saw is a fighter, and I would like to see him die trying to fight another day, like, just trying to fight and not make it. But at the same time, I also understand why they did it, so it's kind of like a point I'm on the fence about.
See, I always figured, I haven't seen the Clone Wars, but I'm assuming that the Saw Gerrera that we see in Rogue One is insane. He's crossed the line into insanity somewhere in between those two things, maybe even between where he raised Jyn and is just, you know, lets himself die because he has a little moment of lucidity, you know, where he's like, when he actually thought Jyn was might be coming to kill him, that was what sort of shocked him into going like, oh man, I'm insane.
Yeah.
You know what? Time to hug the explosion, you know?
Well, in that case, I would want him go barreling, running headfirst into the explosion, trying to fight it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna fight this explosion.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, I mean, it's almost like the stages of grief. So he hit acceptance.
Yeah. And accept. No, I didn't write it down at all in my notes, but I just have to say, I think it's so cool that the Death Star has different levels to where it can either destroy a planet or just take out, like, a city.
Well, it wasn't fully ready. And
yeah.
And a lot of people were complaining because they were like, ah, no, you know, where the Death Star got used first was Alderaan. But I just watched Star Wars last night, and it really... When they go to blow up Alderaan and you see Grand Moff Tarkin setting it, you know, prepare to fire and setting it all up, and you know UA fire when ready, and he sort of, you could see, and he says something to the effect of, I think it's time that we show what the full power of this Death Star is capable of, and all of a sudden that line goes, oh my God. You know, no, it makes perfect sense because they've been trying it at 1/10, you know, at city power. It's like, okay, we got one crystal firing, you know, but when we all have all four crystals in, it's going to take out the whole planet. It actually fits perfectly and makes that line make a little more sense and do that. And I really liked how that dovetailed in with the rest of the Star Wars we have now.
I saw the most horrific thing on Tumblr, and I laughed so hard on it. It said, say what you want about Grand Moff Tarkin, but he reduced unemployment rate on Alderaan to zero.
To zero, yeah, and poverty, and hunger, and war. There was no more war on Alderaan ever. Who's done that?
I was just like, oh, that's terrible.
Good guy Tarkin.
And he would probably use that too. He's like, I just want to let everyone know I reduced unemployment rate on Alderaan.
Well, they there was a little bit of, you know, Saw Gerrera is, and when we were talking to Saw Gerrera and his band were basically ISIS. Right to the point of where they were on a desert world with sort of Arabic sort of clothing and stuff like that. And the Empire, they're like, you know. There was a little conversation in there where they were sort of like, yeah, you know, bringing peace by blowing up planets, yeah. I believe it was Krennic who was just like, hey, you know, if that's what gets it done, if that's the starting point and the end point is peace, then you've got peace, you know. So it shows that there's some, maybe not like there's some people that have in the Empire that really think that they're like, hey, we're just being pragmatic here, you know?
Yeah.
We're really gonna like have peace in the galaxy by having this. This will, you know, this is just a step. We're in a bad place right now, but with this step, we'll be able to like actually make things better, and that there was an element to the Empire that actually thought that, you know,
yeah,
that had to think that in order for it to exist, you know, and that you don't really have to know that. No, that's not even the aim till you get up to like the Emperor.
Yeah,
even Vader to an extent is being, you know, strung along on that philosophy. So I thought that was very well illustrated in Rogue One.
I just realized something. The cameo of the two Cantina guys that were in the original trilogy with, like, Luke and Obi-Wan, but then they were on Jedha.
Uh-huh.
They had to get, like, the last ship out of there.
They had to have been heading to the spaceport to their spaceship when they bumped into them. That was one of the things that made my I didn't like list. It wasn't bad because it was just so short, but it wasn't. It didn't add anything. It was just one of those, hey, I know who those guys are moments, you know?
Yeah. And
I didn't really need those in this. There were enough of that stuff going on in the background and very organically put into it without it being thrown in your face to make that be like a little too much. But yeah, it might have been for the people who are like medium level Star Wars fans. To them, it might have been very gratifying because they were like, I just spotted something obscure, you know?
Yeah, like they had to be on like the last ship out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They were just on their way out, going right to Tatooine.
Yeah. God, I was going to say something else and I forgot. Talking about Tarkin, talking about unemployment rates, talking about guys. I don't remember. Anyway, I pretty much have said all my random thoughts throughout this, because I only had a couple of random thoughts, like, hey, Bodhi looks like Lin-Manuel Miranda, and I wonder if the Guardians of the Will are similar to the Church of the Force. My only other one is, it's kind of odd to have a Star Wars movie without a word scroll at the beginning, but I kind of liked it.
I
remember what I was going to say.
Clone Wars did that.
I know, but I remembered what I said. I don't want to forget it. And then we'll go back to this. I knew that it was, like, before Episode 4. I didn't realize it was, like, a day before Episode 4.
No, Hope. It's, like, 20 minutes before Episode 4.
Yeah, like, they...
It literally is. It's, like, Episode 4 starts out, Darth Vader hops into a Star Destroyer and goes after the ship, like, 2 minutes after that, and then chases him down. I watched Star Wars again, and you could see that the guys who are waiting for the stormtroopers to come in when the ship first gets caught, it's just a testament to how well this Rogue One was done. Those guys look stressed because they're like, oh my god, we just barely made it out of this situation, and now we're going to have another go with Vader. And you can see how stressed and scared they are. And it makes sense why they're... You know, if they were all thinking that they were on a diplomatic mission and like, oh, the Empire's after us, you know, they might have had a different attitude. But it just works so, so perfectly.
Yeah.
I would recommend next time you watch Rogue One, watch Star Wars, like, within a day or two afterwards. And it's just like, oh, whoa.
Yeah, because, like, I knew it was going to be before, but I was thinking it might be, like, a month or two before. But when Leia showed up at the end, it was just like, oh, this is, like, 10 minutes.
When the end started going, there was a palpable, well, between myself and Scott 2.0 sitting next to each other and going, oh, my God, they're going for it. And then my brain started going, all right, these toggle switches have to be thrown in order for them to pull off what they're saying looks like they're saying they're gonna do right now. And they pulled all those toggles perfectly and organically, so so it's not like this forced in thing and forced in retcon. That's the thing, they retcon. There's a lot of retconning done with Rogue One, but it's done so deftly and organically that it works. They, you know how we say Clone Wars improved on, made the prequels better?
Yeah.
They made bits of Star Wars better. They enhanced Star Wars in a way unlike the, like, you know, special editions. It enhanced Star Wars in a positive way. It makes watching Star Wars not only slightly, not different in a way where it's like, oh, that changes everything, but in an enhanced way where it really gives it more emotional resonance and context of what's going on, and it gives it more intensity. Mm-hmm. And it's brought back an intensity, just like with Darth Vader. They brought back an intensity to something that's been very overexposed in the last whole generation. And that's very hard to do.
Yeah. But anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt. So I'm surprised that there was no word scroll at the beginning. You were like, well, they did that in Clone Wars. Continue.
Yeah, I think they do that. I think the scrolls are going to be for the numbered ones. Makes sense. And yeah, I'm very happy with that. I hope they do a with the non-scroll movies and the non, you know, numbered movies, the same as Clone Wars in this one. They start out with a bam, you know, with a loud crashing, almost startling musical score. You know, Clone Wars, I mean, I edit it onto this this show every week, and when you see the waveform for it, it goes boom. There's no subtlety to the way it begins, and that's the same with this one. This one starts out with all the strings going bump, and maybe that's going to be how we get at the beginning of the movies. We'll get space, and then we'll get a loud report, and then it'll go into whatever feel of music starts out that movie. But who knows? Maybe we'll get something different every time. It's very interesting and intriguing to see what they're going to do next. Side projects, Han Solo. And you know, how we're saying, hey, you know, Rebels did that before with Darth Vader. Well,
they did it with Leia and Lando.
Well, that's what I'm going to say. Lando's going to be in the Han Solo movie.
I didn't even connect that.
Right. So we've already gotten a little bit of Lando in Rebels. So that we've gotten a little preview of a little bit of what to expect from the Han Solo movie. If so, thumbs up. Because Lando's great in Rebels.
So, the last thing before we rate up the movie, someone asked me to list all the Clone Wars and Rebels things I could find in the movie. And so, this was all the ones I could find. There could always be more, because I think people are still discovering Easter eggs. So, I'm just going to run down this list, some of these things I've already said. One of these I actually really want to talk about, though. So, number one, Saw Gerrera, of course. He was from Clone Wars. When he said that it was important to see Jyn, especially on this day, I took that as the day his sister passed. I've already mentioned that. In a blink and you miss it scene, Chopper from Rebels was in a screenshot. I missed it, but I saw the screenshot of it, and they confirmed it was actually, after every episode of Rebels comes out, they have a YouTube video called Rebels Recon, where they talk about the episode and stuff.
And so that's just Chopper and not just the same kind of droid as Chopper?
They've already confirmed it is Chopper, because what they did was in Rebels Recon, they have these, like, little snippets called Chopper Cam, and it's, like, what Chopper gets up to in the office, and he, like, rolls around and causes trouble in the office and stuff like that. So they just took that droid from the Chopper Cam bit, and they had the same guy operate it, and they've already confirmed it is Chopper. Like, that is exactly who it is.
Oh,
it's
excellent.
So Chopper does have a cameo. Something I want to talk about. So when Jyn and Cassian are looking through all the different files in K2's, like, holding off the bad guys, before they get to the Death Star one, they mention something called Project Black Saber. Or is it Dark Saber?
Dark Saber.
I thought it was Black Saber, because I said Dark Saber and someone corrected me.
Oh, really? I'm pretty sure it was Dark Saber.
Okay, well, either way.
Because it immediately went ding, 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 ding in my head.
And the first thing I thought was, hey, Pre Vizsla in Clone Wars had a Dark Saber. And so what does this have to do with Mandalore?
There was a book called Dark Saber too.
Yeah, and so, but like now that we're in canon though, Pre Vizsla had a Dark Saber. He ruled Mandalore for a short time. And we now know that Sabine in Rebels has Pre Vizsla's Darksaber. Like, right. She picked that up off of Maul. Or does this have something to do with Maul, because the guy's a fucking cockroach and he had the Darksaber for years. Like, he had that saber for years and years.
Right.
So does this have something to do with Maul? Does this have to do with Mandalore? Does Pre Vizsla still have Death Watch people out there? Does that have to do with them? And that's, like, his ongoing legacy.
I think this was a nod to all that existing. It was just saying, like, hey, here you go. You know, it was for us. It was for people like us to go, like,
Well, see, the thing is that in a Rebels Recon episode for the mid-season finale, they talked about one of Sabine's story arcs in the coming half season is the fact that she's going to be learning, A, how to use the Darksaber, B, she's also going to learn that this is a sign of power in Mandalore. Like, when you have a Darksaber, that is a sign that your clan has power. And that is a symbol for Mandalore in their past. And so to me, that says that there is something playing bigger that Sabine's going to be a part of that has something to do with Mandalore. And somehow it's going to get the Empire's attention. That's what it tells me.
That could also very well be. Or Darth Maul could get the Empire's attention. Either one.
Yeah, because the guy's a cockroach. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for him to show up in Episode 8 and be like, Rey, be my apprentice, Rey.
It seems like they're going towards an arc of redemption for Darth Maul, because the guy who plays Darth Maul's been, like, saying, yeah, Darth Maul's actually kind of more of a Jedi now, and Ezra's more of a Sith.
Yeah, so... Oh, I love Sam Witwer. The other thing, talking about Rebels Recon, that's really exciting. In the last episode for the mid-season finale, Pablo Hidalgo specifically said, come January when we return, we're actually going to be able to talk about how Rogue One ties directly into Rebels.
Right.
Like, they'll actually be able to fully discuss it. So I'm very excited to watch Rebels Recon come January. Of course, we mentioned that Saul Guerrera is coming to Rebels. I heard Hera being announced over the intercom as General Syndulla. The Ghost was parked in one of the hangars, and they were in the Battle of Scarif. The only thing that scared me is when all the ships were fleeing at the end, I never actually saw the Ghost ship leave, which is very scary to me. But that being said, I will say that I've only seen the movie once, so it could have been something like Blink and I missed it.
Correct, yes.
So I'm both scared and excited that the Ghost was at the Battle of Scarif. Dave Filoni has mentioned that if they actually get there in Seasons to Rebel, that he wants to do the Battle of Scarif from the Ghost crew's point of view, which would be super exciting. And then the last thing I noticed, because I first noticed it in the credits and I told you about it, but then I started looking into it and it was more than just like a few of them. For a lot of the additional voices in Rogue One, they brought in many of the cast and crew of Clone Wars and Rebels. So some of these additional voices include Dave Filoni, James Arnold Taylor, who is Obi-Wan, Sam Witwer, who is Darth Maul, Steve Bloom, who is Zeb, Steven Stanson, who is the voice of Tarkin in Clone Wars and Rebels, but he did not voice Tarkin in this. I just want to make that clear. Robin Atkins-Downs, who is Sham Syndulla, Vanessa Marshall, who is Hera Syndulla, Tom Kane, who is the narrator in Admiral Yularen in Clone Wars, and you'll like this one, Matthew Wood, who is General Grievous.
Yes.
And then they also had a lot of the crew and sound designers and, like, some of those people just from Clone Wars and Rebels who also did additional voices as well. So that was the list of all the Clone Wars and Rebels things I could find in Rogue One.
That's a pretty good list, and I'm sure it's going to probably get bigger.
Yeah, that's as of right now, those are the ones I can find. So I guess finally, how would you rate the movie, Chris, and why?
Well, with Scott Gardner and I gave it an 8.5, and it is now currently moved up to an 8.7. And my prediction was it's probably gonna end up, as I watch it more and think about it more, at a 9, and maybe even cruise up to 9.5. It's a good movie.
Yeah.
And there's problems with it, but the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, the more I scrutinize it, the more I'm finding to like about it. You know what I mean? And that's sort of what Scott Gardner was saying, too. I don't think he's going up to a 9, but he was like, yeah, I get the feeling the more I watch this, the more I'm going to like it, you know?
Would you say that this might possibly be your favorite Star Wars movie?
No.
What's your favorite one? I actually don't know
this.
Star Wars. The original one?
Yeah.
Is that like a perfect 10?
Oh, it's a 10. It's a perfect movie. Yeah, you know, like with like Raiders of the Lost Ark, like Jaws. There's certain movies that just work perfectly, you know. I mean, as genre movies, those are like the ones that I think of as perfect movie. Close Encounters of the Third Kind is one of those ones where just everything fires 100% from beginning to end. And, you know, I think Empire Strikes Back is a better movie than Star Wars. It's better written, better acted, better, you know, the visuals took a big step up in everything. But nothing will ever beat, you know, as Star Wars is one of the ultimate cinema experiences. It's like I said, that's what created that universe. You're never going to beat it. You're only going to expand it and enhance it from that point on. And so I sort of grade new Star Wars movies on how do they do on that? Do they expand it and do they, you know, enhance it? And do they have good action and good characters? And that's sort of the metric I go on. And this one didn't really have, like, the characters weren't bad characters, but they weren't, you know, characters that I'm going to love and embrace forever. But they were good enough. But it had great action, and it had, and as far as in enhancing and expanding the universe, it did that in spades. And it pushed technology ahead by creating a bunch of CG characters really well, and having Tarkin being a full back from the dead, you know, integral to the plot character, you know, not just a novelty, kind of a novelty, but still he was in there, and they used him. So
they used him well too.
Yeah. I mean, people are like, oh, this is like The Empire Strikes Back. I think that's a little hyperbolic. But as far as, you know, the bar of what Star Wars movies, modern Star Wars movies are, this one's rating really high. Now, who knows, you know, we might get something someday that'll hit all the emotional levels of Force Awakens and all the technical and battle, you know, fun levels of Rogue One, and it'll be an over-the-top and unbelievable thing. Who knows? But for now, yeah, we're heading towards it. We're chugging towards 9. How about you?
Yeah. For me, this I do want to see it again. So I'm grading you off the fact that I've only seen it once. It is probably one of my favorite Star Wars movies. One of them. I would even with the characters, like, as much as I like wasn't a big fan of Cassian and Jen, I love characters like Chirrut and Bodhi and K2 so much more, and they made up for it. And so, like, having people like that, I think the story is better than Force Awakens. It did so many things so well. And as, you know, Clone Wars is what got me into Star Wars, and the fact that it actually brought Clone Wars and Rebels to a live-action movie, to a general audience to be enjoyed and loved, and could possibly bring more fans to that, that's just, that is so amazing to me. And that means so much.
I'm going to say
so
get used
much.
To it. I think Disney's going to do that from now on. They have no reason not
means,
to.
That means so much to me. Like, that is the world to me. And, like, I think it could possibly, and I hate to say this, and this is no knock on the original, I think once I start watching this more, and get a chance to watch it more, I think it could possibly be my favorite Star Wars movie to date. Possibly.
Well, we'll see. The you know what the great thing is? It might be. But, like, as you know, I mean, watching it over and over again, it's going to take you a year to watch it a bunch of times. And then there's going to be another Star Wars movie out.
Yeah. So as of right now, though, where it sits, I would probably rate it an 8.5.
All right, so you're where I started out with, and so we'll see how fast you you're. But I'm betting just from what you've said, it's more likely to go up than it is to go down.
Yeah, though what I'm kind of thinking about is that, like, I am a new fan. I'm kind of like the new Who versus the old Who. Like, I watched the original trilogy when I was a kid, and I watched the prequels when I was a kid. But I'm a fan of the new stuff, like Clone Wars and Rebels. Like, that's my bread and butter. That's my Star Wars bread and butter. And so, like, to me, if I can really only really... I loved Force Awakens. I loved everything about it. Like, there's a lot of flaws in the story. And yes, it's a lot like the original trilogy. But I feel like that was a movie made for my generation and, like, the new generation. Like, that is me. So, like, if I had to sit down and watch either Force Awakens or Rogue One right now, I would probably watch Force Awakens because I would have to make an emotional thing to sit down and be like, okay, let's watch everyone die in Rogue One tonight.
Right.
So, to me, like, I feel like if I just was going to sit down and just, like, watch one of them, I would watch Rogue One. But I still feel like I would probably sit down and watch Force Awakens. I still feel like Rogue One is the better story. And so I think in time it will be my favorite movie. But as of right now, I still like Force Awakens a little bit better. I would say, like, if Rogue One was at 8.5, Force Awakens is a pretty solid, probably like 8.759 for me.
Wow.
Because that was a passing of the torch movie. And that was a movie that was made for me. And that's nothing against, like, the older stuff. And, like, I've recently rewatched the original trilogy for the first time in several years. And I loved it. I loved it so much. But there are still just parts, like, there are things in it that I can't connect to. like, I didn't, like, for the first time, I actually appreciated Leia as a character. I didn't really like her as a kid because I just didn't really get her. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. And so that's why Ahsoka was so important, because, like, I understood Ahsoka. Like, she was there. And that's how it is for me and Rey. Like, I get Rey. I understand her. Rey has a lot of things that are, like, that I have things in my life as well. Like, so I get these new characters. Like, they are made for me and my generation. And so I think that's why I like it a little bit more. And that's not saying anything bad against the original trilogy or the prequels. I just feel like I'm now in a time. Sorry, old farts. It's my time now. Like, this is for me and my generation and my, like, my group. And it is our time. And, like, this is, it's our turn. To you guys have carried this torch, and it's our turn to take this torch and then give it to the next group. Does that make sense?
Sure.
And well, so, like, that's why.
Because that's how time works. That's how aging works.
So, like, for me, like, this was everything. Like, I really love what Disney is doing, and this is so good and so amazing, and it's just all really good, and I'm just so. I'm still not really excited for the Boba Fett or the Han Solo movie, but I've been wrong before.
Right, I feel the same way. I have a lot more hope for the Han Solo movie now, just because they're doing so well. But neither of those movies are like have been something. And I mean, I'm interested in seeing both of those movies, but I have a lot of reticence towards them. So I'm hoping, and I think I have a really good chance that I'm going to be pleasantly surprised with both of them. So
like that, it's kind of how I feel about the Darth Maul comic. Like, you know, there are so many other characters that, and I like Darth Maul, but I don't feel it's needed. And so, like, if anything, this makes me more excited for Episode 8.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I am now like just so excited for Episode 8.
Oh, my prediction for what we're going to see in episode 8 or 9 at the latest, we're going to see Darth Vader's castle again in a Star Wars movie. That was brought in Rogue One, I think, just so, you know, to be like, here it is, it's Darth Vader's castle on Mustafar, and we'll see that again. We'll see Kylo Ren going into it to either, like, dig through it, or maybe that's where Snoke's living or something. Who knows? But I think we will be seeing that again, because it was big and bad and cool looking, and it's like, yeah, I can get used to that. Keep that coming.
I need one more thing, and then I'll be actually, like, over the moon happy. I need, in the movies, like the live-action movies, I need a shout-out to Ahsoka. That's what I need.
Oh, well, it's very possible.
Yeah. That's it. That's how I feel about Rogue One.
Excellent.
Oh, that was much longer than I thought it was going to be.
I know. Well, we don't have any mail for this one, fortunately.
Yeah.
But I do have another, this is a few episodes back, and I don't know which one it was. I was crying and bitching about how I think I was eating some Kit Kats, and you're like, oh, Kit Kats. And I'm like, yeah, but American Kit Kats suck. And I've had Canadian Kit Kats, so I know what delicious Kit Kats taste like. And these things are kind of waxy reproductions. And somebody heard that. And that was Dario Gonzalez, who sent me right in time for Christmas two boxes full of Kit Kats from around the world. None from Canada, but I've had Canadian Kit Kats. So there's England, there's France, there's from Munich, which is the home, Nestle's home. So those are the, like, home Kit Kats. And then I got another box with some Japanese Kit Kats of all different flavors of Kit Kats. So until I'm going to work through each country. There's quite a few from France, but I'm going to pick one of each country and each flavor and give it a live taste test on J Guys and Jedi until I run out of Kit Kats to taste. So a very Star Warsy section, Kit Kats from around the world. I'm opening up today's Kit Kats from France, and it is a cookies and cream flavored Kit Kat.
Oh, that sounds so good.
And, like,
though I just remember we do have feedback, because you were talking to me about it beforehand.
Oh, okay, right.
And, oh yeah, but continue
well,
with
had,
your cookies.
Well, I've had a bunch of people say that they like the show.
Yeah, but you gotta tell the story so I can officially formally thank them.
Oh, okay.
But finish your Kit Kats first.
Okay. So I've opened up my Kit Kat. One thing I've noticed is all the other Kit Kats from other countries are only two Kit Kats. They're a smaller portion. Maybe that's why American Kit Kats are crappy, because they have to give you like 2 to 3 times as much in a package and make a profit. But we'll see. These are French cookies and cream, and they're shaped just like a Kit Kat. They say hashtag my break on them, but the top of them is white, like white chocolate, and I'm guessing it's gonna be like Oreo cream frosting more than white chocolate, and then the bottom of them's chocolate. Okay.
Oh my god.
I'm so jealous of you right now.
Wow.
Dario, okay. I'm next.
First off, yes, it's like frosting on top, but. Oh my god, these are good. Wow.
You know what I want now? They're some of my favorites, but they're the matcha green tea Kit Kats. I love those.
I will save you a package because I have a whole bunch of those.
Oh,
we'll be getting to
yes.
those, Hope. I'll send you some green tea. Okay. So this cookies and cream does not taste like cookies and cream. It does not taste Oreo-like at all. But it tastes like, it reminds me of something you get at a bakery. It's good. I mean, the crunchy part in the middle has this like waft of almond when you bite in, like almond oil, almost like. So it's almost like white frosting, crunchy, almond, vaguely almondy, and chocolate.
Oh, I'm so jealous of you right now.
It's almost, it reminds me of those, you know, those Ferrero Rocher candies. They're little round guys, and they've got like liquid chocolate in the middle of them, but they're sort of crunchy and chocolate on the outside.
Oh, by the Rex, I'm fighting the urge to hang up on you. I'm so jealous. By the Rex.
Well, get used to it, because we got a few episodes to go through this and a few flavors.
Shut up.
Wow, these are fantastic. These are obviously higher quality ingredients. Yes, they're a failure insofar as they're not really cookies and cream. Mm-hmm. At least how I, in my non-French interpretation of cookies and cream, pardon my eating, but they're like something you would get at a bakery. They're like a little finger sort of thing. They're good. And they just have so much more going on than American Kit Kats are just sort of like waxy chocolate over crunch. And this has like notes of flavor in it, you know?
I'm like glaring at my microphone right now. You suck.
Talk about food more, and maybe more listeners will send you food.
I am a bit of a foodie.
Somebody mails Hope a dozen eggs.
Hey, I do like eggs, but please don't mail me eggs.
Eggs are great, yeah.
Scrambled eggs is one of my favorite foods, so.
So French cookies and cream Kit Kats, big thumbs up, big thumbs up.
Well, we do kind of sort of have feedback this week, because I forgot to put in the show, but beforehand, Chris is talking to me about being on some other shows, so.
Yes, I was told to pass on from Scott Rifen. These are all people I've been on a show with recently. Jonathan Kreitz and Alan Middleton, and especially Jonathan Kreitz and Alan Middleton, like, stopped me before we hung up and were like, I just wanted to say, tell Hope, we're really enjoying Jay Guys and Jedi, and we were listening to the show every week, and we really enjoy it. And I said, I'll tell her.
I just wanted to say thank you guys so much for listening. Like, that just really means a lot to us. This is a show I'm very passionate about, and I couldn't do it without Chris. Like, that's the thing, is, like, make sure you're thanking Chris just as much. I'm just writing notes and talking. He's doing the hard work of editing. But, like, seriously, like, this is totally collaborative. We do it together. And so I'm glad that people are enjoying it and that you guys love it so much and that you guys listen to us. It's our crazy little classy show. And I'm glad you like it.
I got a bowl full of Kit Kats because of this show.
Yeah. I was talking to my buddy Angel. She's actually just started our show, started episode 1 Clone Wars movie. And I was just like, oh, hun, we don't really start getting our stride until much later in the show. She's like, well, that's fine. And I was like, no, Angel, we pride ourselves on being quote-unquote classy. And she was like, Hope, I've been on your shows before. Like, I've been on several of your shows, I know. And I'm like, no, you don't. Wait till you get to Grievous Intrigue, and then you'll know.
Then you'll know
for real. Actually, I'm gonna ask you guys. New year, new everything. So we've done the show for God, like a year now, but we've gone through two seasons. I'm curious. What has been your favorite episode of Jegaz and Jedi? Please leave us. You can either tweet us at Jegaz and Jedi and let us know. You can leave us a comment on the Facebook page when we post the Rogue One episode. So just find the Rogue One episode of Jegaz and Jedi on the Two True Freaks Facebook page and leave us a comment. I'm actually really curious what you guys' favorite episode or maybe like top favorite, like top three or something. Just because I want to know. I want to know. So I'm curious.
You can tell me what you hate too. I'll take the constructive criticism. I'll even take the like mean criticism if you want because it cracks me up. But yeah,
actually, I'll take that too. I want to know, like, what do you think works for the show too, and what do you think that we could improve on?
What doesn't work? Yeah.
Yeah, it's New Year. We're going into another year of this. We'll probably get through seasons 3 and 4 during the course of this year. So yeah, before we really get into it, what do you like, dislike, and what can we work on? And what was your favorite episode so far of Jegaz and Jedi? Mine is probably a toss-up between Grievous Intrigue and the Season 1 recap. Those are definitely two that stick out in my head.
Grievous Intrigue is definitely my favorite, but I'd have to go through it again, because there's a few other ones that I forget about that then I remember how classy they got, and then, you know. So I'd have to go through and give a whole class assessment of the whole thing, because, not to toot our own horn, but I think we've reached some pretty classy moments, and we've set some pretty classy bars in the scope of this show.
Yeah, because like Grievous Intrigue was my favorite just because of our long, yes, classy tangent. But I think Season 1 recap was the first time I got like super emotional on the show, and apparently everybody likes when I cry.
They like when you cry. They like when you do anything like cry, sing. Everybody like it to do anything. They like you to dance like it. They want us to dance like the monkey. Yeah, you know.
Dance monkeys dance.
Yeah, they like it when we get mad and stomp our feet and yell about stuff, and they love it when we take a movie and make out with it, you know.
I'm gonna cry and someone's gonna be like, that wasn't good enough, and I'm just gonna be like, are you not entertained? So
yeah, I just want to say hope does not cry for effect, so you really don't want to, you really, you know, just honestly, you just for the state of things going on, you don't want the situations that make Hope cry. You know,
I'm actually
she's
not
doing it for dramatic effect, and I could tell in your voice, I could hear when it's just like at the beginning of the show when you were talking about Carrie Fisher, you could hear where it was like, oh no.
Yeah, like for me, I get teary, but I don't cry a lot. Like Publix commercials at Christmas make me like teary, but I don't cry. And like inspiring Olympic commercials, like during the Olympics, and they're like, this person made this one thing against all the odds. Like, I get teary, but I don't actually cry.
That sounds so like my roommate during my roommate housemate, you know, when during like, you know, PMS. She's like, I just cried in a commercial and I don't know why.
So yeah, like, so it takes a lot to make me cry because I'm not a very crying person. I'm just a teary person. So yeah, I'd like to think that I'm pretty tough.
Yeah. So send in more stuff to make Hope laugh.
Yeah. I like
whatever
that.
You send in, make sure it's classy.
Yeah. And yeah. So if you also want to send me like Once Upon a Time in Wonderland stuff, so I can just have my Michael Sacca fix, that'd be great. It's a new year. I have to mention him. Though I did have to say, I bought for Christmas, I got an Amazon gift card from my boss, and I bought the entire Hamilton soundtrack, and I just finished Act 1. Mm. So that's why I was like, man, let's talk about
Hamilton.
That's
why you were talking about it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was on my brain, because I bought it for Christmas, and so I'm finally getting it.
Yeah,
so that was my big thing. I guess the other thing I have to say, and I'll put the pictures on Facebook, I put up pictures in my room in frames, and one of them is a picture of Leia, Padme, and Rey. And the other one is a Star Wars Rebel picture, but done like an old Star Wars movie poster. And so those are my other... I bought a bunch of picture frames. That was my other gift to myself.
Well, while we're talking Christmas, I should thank Dario because I got all those Kit Kats from him. I'm going to thank Mark Kambach because I got... And I also got a neat card from Dario. Mark Kambach sent me a brick of Star Trek books. I got a card from... Jean, the podcasting machine of his daughter. I got a
I got one of her too.
I'm looking at your Christmas card right now, okay? And I'm moving down my pile of my small pile of Christmas cards that I've gotten. I've got one from Dr. Bill Robinson with his dog and his cat.
I loved that one. Oh my God, Bill.
And I've gotten one from the Pasquarella family too. Pasquarella family portrait.
I'm just going to say, because I don't have my cards in front of me, and I'll forget people, I got cards from people from Two True Freaks, so thank you.
Yeah.
I don't want to forget anybody. So.
I give a double thank you, because I don't send out cards, so I feel bad when I do get cards. I don't even give out my address, but some of them still have it. So thanks, guys. That's always fun to get, and basically, yeah.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I enjoyed the Christmas cards, too, so, like, I know I didn't really get a chance to send many back, so, yeah, I feel bad, but thank you. I really appreciated them, and I'm thinking of you guys, so, yeah, that's about it. Where can people find you, Chris?
TwoTrueFreaks.com, you know the place. It's the website with all the Two True Freaks podcasts, just piles and piles and piles of them, and we recently had like a new Dinner for Geeks and a new My Star Wars Story by Scott Reifen posted, and it's always good news. And Dave Weider's been doing a bunch of podcasts on Back to the Future, which I think should be getting a little more love and attention, because it's been a long time coming on Two True Freaks. Scott Gardner and I should have done it, but it's hard to get together to do that, so it's good to see Back to the Future.
And, Debbie Reynolds passed away.
Oh, jeez.
Sorry to interrupt. Geez. I just saw it.
I know. It's all happening during the last podcast we did was right when we'd heard about Carrie Fisher having her heart attack on the plane. So it's just like happening during the podcast. It's just, it's sad. And I don't know, you can go see us on Facebook. There's Two True Freaks on Facebook. There's a Two True Freaks Cantina. There's we've got a Back to a Bins page on Facebook. There's the Two True Freaks soundtrack score appreciation page that Scott Gardner's running. That's a lot of fun. That has a lot of great stuff. It's a good place to catch new stuff, you know, from people who are real super soundtrack collectors and stuff, and neophytes. So it's just a good little mix of people posting up stuff. It's neat. What about you, Hope?
Well,
where you at?
You can find me on Twitter. I run our Twitter page at JGuysAndJedi. You can also find me at Hope Mullinex, and I'm also the newsbeat writer for, oh my god, I forgot the website. What the Fangirl? Wow! yeah, let's try that one again. I'm also the newsbeat writer for What the Fangirl. You can leave that in, Chris. but I kind of took a little bit of the last, 2 weeks off just because of Christmas and everything. But I do write news over there, and I'm excited about getting into the new year and doing that, too. And thank you for everybody who has supported my constant spamming on Facebook and Twitter with What the Fangirl's news. I always appreciate you guys. Spread the word. The more people who see us, the better it is for us. Yay, What the Fangirl. Yay. So, yeah, that's where you can find me.
And speaking of J Guys and Jedi on Twitter, I forgot to mention that there's Two True Freaks on Twitter run by Gene, the podcasting Twitter machine.
The podcasting machine.
And I'm always neglectful of it because I'm a Twitter hater and I don't go on there and stuff, but I really should not, discourage Twitter use. I should be plugging it more because it's one of the main forms of communication with humans these days. So, yeah.
I'm gonna leave you with a helpful thing about, even though by the time this comes out it'll be 2017. My buddy Bill Meeks from Greetings from Storybrooke and Legend of Gotham podcast quoted, "It isn't 2016's fault. We're all just getting old."
That's true.
All right, you guys. Well, happy 2017, and we'll see you in season 3.
Yeah. Now get off our lawn.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at TwoTrueFreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at TwoTrueFreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at TwoTrueFreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks. If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm not even... Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.